Substitute. Haven't found any substitute senators yet, though.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is March 26, 2015. This is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order in this time and this place. And I am going to open the public hearing on House Bill 5040. And we, of course, have a shortened time period to work with today. We have a full Ways and Means Committee convening at 4, and the speaker has asked some of us to meet with her at 3:45. So I'm going to depart at 3:45 and turn the gavel over to my good co-chair at that point. So, Ms. Nabirka, do you have anything that you want to share with us before we jump into agency testimony?
Thank you, Representative Gomberg, Senator Johnson, members of the subcommittee. The only thing I have to add is that ODOT has provided answers to the questions that were asked at yesterday's meeting. They're on OLIS under yesterday's meeting date. And that includes the statewide rail safety review report that Senator Johnson asked for.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that information. And welcome back, Mr. Garrett. And thank you for providing that information. Again, that would be listed. Those questions asked yesterday would be listed on yesterday's meeting materials.
That's correct.
So, Mr. Garrett, where would you like to take us today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. We're going to turn our attention to the Transportation Program Development Portfolio. Ms. Bohard will walk through that discipline today, and we acknowledge the time frames, and we will run at a significant pace here. So,
well, I apologize for having to leave early. Welcome, Ms. Bohard.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs, committee members. For the record, my name is Jerry Bohard. I'm the Transportation Development Division Administrator. I'm here to talk about the transportation program development limitations. So there's some slight differences with that. I don't know if you all have the document in front of you, but I draw your attention to the organizational chart. It really reflects the fact that it includes staff from Transportation Development Division as well as staff from the Highway Division. So about 35% of the staff that are supported in this limitation are from Highway. And I think as I go through this presentation, you'll see both the relationship that and really the diversity of work that we do within there. So clearly the focus of this program is to develop an efficient, safe transportation system that enhances Oregon's economic competitiveness and really also works to integrate community visions for what they would like to see the future of their community look like.
Ms. Bohard, just philosophically, why is it ODOT's responsibility to help fulfill a community vision?
Co-Chair Johnson, so the transportation system, we look at transportation system holistically throughout the state. And so we want to make sure that as we build the state's transportation system, it does link in with the local transportation system. So that's one of the reasons we support transportation system plans. The other is that as we're developing these projects, we are developing projects within that local community. And we want to make sure that those are the types of projects that the community wants to see. It really allows us to be most effective to bring those projects to fruition. Otherwise, I would imagine, as we do sometimes, we end up in a variety of different legal battles, and it takes longer for projects to be developed. So we see that really bringing consensus at the beginning during the planning process is really the way to be the most efficient, not only in identifying the projects that folks want to see, the right solutions, but also allowing us to be the most efficient in moving those projects forward.
Madam Chair, if I may, just to add to Ms. Bohard's statement here, I think there are certain attributes that make up a healthy community. And I would submit to this committee that fundamental to a healthy community is a transportation system that allows people to connect with people, social transactions, as well as business and markets to produce the outcomes they need for economic health as well.
So There's two key components to the transportation program development. The first actually is transportation system projects, and I think you heard Director Garrett speak to this in his presentation. But a little less than half of the budget, 49% of the budget, is going to projects. Predominantly that's going to the Connect Oregon program, which I think many of you all are aware of. We're through the Connect 5 process, and in that, since 2005, we've seen $382 million of lottery funds go to identifying 240 projects. Of those 240 projects, 186 have been completed, 48 are in design or construction, and there were six that were just approved by our Transportation Commission last week, and those are going through the agreement process.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Senator, I'm sorry, you got the gavel now. What percentage of those projects were highway, road? What percentage were rail? What percentage were small airports? Do you have kind of a breakdown?
Co-chairs, Senator Monroe, yes, I do. For the total, let's see if I have these numbers correct.
I think while Jerry's looking things up, I can tell you that highway-funded projects.
Right.
So any project that could use highway trust fund dollars is not eligible for the lottery back Connect Oregon. So we can break things down in terms of the overall program, or we can actually tell you the most recent activity that played itself out with Connect Oregon 5, because that was a decision that was culminated just last week by our commission.
Thank you, Director Garrett. In aviation, the total was 24%, bike ped 1%, marine 15%, rail 44%, transit 11%, and in the earlier Connect Oregons, we had some that we considered multimodal, and that was 4%. I think it's important to note that the reason bike ped is so low is that it was just part of the Connect Oregon process in Connect 5. So the numbers.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I watched the final meeting with some interest, and as I understand it, there was money provided for Salem Transit. How did that get on the list?
Co-chair, Senator Johnson, when the commission went through, so the final review committee, when they met, they identified and prioritized projects, essentially I think it was 1 through 32. The direction that, the action that our commission took was to support the projects 2 through 7. And so the last project was the Salem Transit Center.
Oh, okay, because I, follow, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I sat through both the penultimate and the ultimate committee, and they had picked a project from each of the five disciplines, aviation, transit, rail, marine, and the transit one was a bus shelter, and I was just curious how it was then that two transit projects ended up, and so instead of doing 1 through 6, they did through 2 through 7.
Senator Johnson, correct. And then through the final review committee, what they did after they did, as you were correct, they identified one project out of each of the modes. In the ensuing conversation before they prioritized the rest of the projects based on what the final review committee had done earlier, there was discussions around the Salem Transit, and the final review committee agreed to bump that up to the very next one.
Follow up?
Please.
To bump it up to the next one from someplace farther down in the line, or was it where the line was drawn?
Co-chair Senator Johnson, the line, when we started the final review committee, we had approximately $4 million.
Correct.
And so that was how we developed the line. But we recognize that has been true in other Connect Oregon processes where projects cancel, as was what happened with Benton County after the final review committee met. So they wanted to be cognizant of how they prioritized the rest of the project. So they actually were very, had a continuing discussion around the other projects that were below that cut line about how they wanted to prioritize them. And so that was how the Salem Transit Center ended up right the next one in line.
And one more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Another follow-up.
I understand, not as much as I should, about how the Salem Transit works, providing free transportation to a certain class of state employees within some geographic confines. And I'm and you may not know this, but I'm trying to figure out how Salem Transit is able to say we offer free transportation to a certain class of state employees but not others. And I offer that for your consideration as you enter into a contract with Salem Transit, because you'll have to have a contract for each of the projects regardless of what discipline. But I'm just trying to figure out on what legal justification Salem Transit has to create different classes of state employees, those eligible for free transportation and those that have to pay the fare.
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, I will have to follow up on
that. Yeah, you're not Salem Transit. I know that. So I lift it up for your consideration.
Thank you. Okay. So we've now, that addresses, like I said, about 49% of the budget for TPD. So what I'd like to do is talk really about program development. And program development is that first stage of a transportation project, and it really is often before a project even is identified, before a need is identified. And so what this limitation really does do is incorporate, I would say, essentially five components. The first is transportation planning. The second is management systems, and you'll see in a minute how this relates to my organizational structure. The other is identifying of potential projects, the scoping of projects, and then ultimately the final statewide transportation improvement program. And I believe that Director Garrett provided that as a prop in his presentation. So really the work that happens within transportation program development occurs kind of, those are those goalposts, I would say, for program development. And I'm going to use the TDD organizational structure to walk through that. So the first one is our research program. And this is a federally funded program. And really the goal of research is to foster that innovation within our agency. We do, obviously, research. We do testing. We do evaluating both of products, materials, processes. Majority of our work does go in support of highway, whether we're looking at new materials for pavements, whether we're looking at new processes about what we might be doing with regards to our assets. But research is also done for all disciplines within the agency. In fact, one of the more recent ones that just got approved and we're just underway is working with Greg Delpani and Motor Carrier. We're recognizing that freight parking for semis is an issue throughout the state as more trucking activity is occurring and we don't have enough freight parking. So what are the implications of that? What are the solutions that we might be able to do there? So that just kind of gets you a sense of the diversity of the types of research that we do within the agency. The other key program within research is technology transfer.
Excuse me. Yes, Senator Johnson.
If you don't mind, Ms. Bohart, another question. So the problem statement is there's not enough parking for trucks, and you work on solutions. To what degree are you involved in postulating those solutions? Let's say that there's a place someplace in Senator Monroe's district that's in an urban setting. Are you getting into land uses? Are you getting into prescriptions for emissions? Are you getting into amenities for visiting truck drivers? What's the scope of that inquiry?
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, so I don't have the problem statement in front of me for this one, but this one was really more about the recognition of the safety concerns associated with parking. We're seeing semis park along our ramps, finding places where they need to park because regulations require that they be out of service for a certain amount of time. So what we're really doing in this research project is identifying just how bad, in some sense, the problem is. And based on that will probably be the next steps of what might be some potential solutions. So this is really just the beginning stage. But I brought it up as an example because I just wanted to recognize the diversity of research work that we do. And it will be something that is done in concert with our freight staff that's in TDD as we think about, because it was one of the issues that was raised in the freight plan as well. So
thank you.
So the other program that I was going to talk about as part of research was called the Technology Transfer Center. And this is one where we actually take the information that we glean through our research, the knowledge that we bring, and we share it with primarily our cities and counties, so our other stakeholders who do projects as well. One of the more important programs for federal highways, and certainly one that's important enough for the Association of Counties that they actually provide a good portion of the match for that program. So moving on to transportation development, this is probably the biggest section within TDD and is one that we have a lot of relationship with the technical services branch of highway. There are four main components to transportation data: road inventory, crash analysis, traffic monitoring, and geographic information services. And where the highway division really links to this is what's key to this is our asset management program. So all of the inspection data that we have relative to bridge, relative to pavements, relative to culverts, all of our fixed assets, all of that information is usually collected by staff within the technical services branch, analyzed and put into our various databases within TransData. That information is shared with all of our partners. A lot of this information that we collect is also used by our local and regional partners. And it is also used throughout really the whole kind of what we would call the project cycle. So this data gets used, whether it's used in planning, whether it's used in project scoping, whether it's used in the actual construction of the project, and then obviously as we move on into maintenance and operations. So data kind of culminates in that whole circle of project development. The other thing that's really key around the work that we do in TransData is that much of the reporting that we're required to do for federal highways and for federal transit and for federal motor carrier and the National Highway Traffic Safety, all of that reporting comes out of TransData. We're required to do a highway performance monitoring submittal. We're required to do a certified mileage report, and most of those help us to identify what our apportionments are going to be every year at the national level. Certainly the work that we do around our crash analysis, so it's not just for automobiles, but it's for trucks and buses and well. And so I think you heard Troy Costales and Greg Delpani speak about a number of the safety issues and their key performance measures. All of that data is kept within the section known as TransData within TDD. And finally, geographic information services, in a very simplified way, is our computerized mapping.
I'm sorry, yes, Senator Johnson.
Ms. Bohard, the dissection and autopsy of an accident is pretty complicated, sophisticated work. Do you have accident reconstructionists on staff, or do you rely on OSP? Or who are the people? I should have known that function was in transportation planning. I just assumed it was in safety. But who are the folks that you have that do this work?
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, that work does happen within TransData. So we have actually a program that helps us to reconstruct all of this. I hate to think of how many data points that our staff puts in from the data that they collect from each of the crash information. They also get information, the police reports, and say compile all of those reports into one database.
And one more.
Another follow-up.
Is there a threshold? I can't imagine you're out investigating every little fender bender. Does there have to be a fatality? Does there have to be damage to the system? What triggers crash analysis that then goes into your database?
Senator Johnson, I would have to get back to you on that, but it's the reports. I don't know if there's a threshold. There's the reports that are filed through DMV, and so those are all the ones that we do use.
So, Madam Chair, there is a financial threshold. If there's an X number, I think it's $1,500 worth of damage, then you have to file an accident.
That
report.
Means that the BMW accidentally touched the curb?
Exactly right.
Okay, just checking.
Well said.
But the key is that a report has been filed as well.
Okay, cool. So. Thank you.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my apologies if you already covered this, and I came in a little bit late. That threshold brings to mind another question, which is about how the process works when there is damage to the system as opposed to someone's car, how the process you use to go after, maybe that's not the right word, to pursue the liability that person's insurance company might have for damage to the state's assets and infrastructure. Could you talk about that, please?
Yeah,
I know we do that.
Yes,
but it's
we do.
Not done in
Mr. Chairman, Representative Reed. Yeah, we do have a protocol. So we have a part of the organization that if indeed there is damage done to the property, and we know who did it, we have a follow-up protocol to recover the cost to make sure that the state is made whole, given whatever damage is made. So we are quite proactive. It hasn't always been the case. We've been somewhat passive, but I would submit to you over the last several years, we have become much more aggressive in turning the claims around, going after people, using collection agencies to help us recover the cost to the damage done to state property.
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
Thank you. So that's helpful. I'm glad to hear that it's more aggressive. It does. I would like to know a little more detail, and it could be later, too, about what triggers that. I mean, there's probably lots of DMV reports where that's not the case. I distinguish between where there's some potential and where there isn't. As we've talked about before, in some to some degree, there are some specialty companies and firms that help states and cities do a better job of that, be more efficient at that, and recover more money. And in this era when we're all struggling very hard to find the dollars to invest in infrastructure, I'm interested in what potential exists.
I think, Mr. Chairman, Representative Reed, this is an excellent question. Again, we have been more aggressive, but we have looked at private sector engagement. We will get back those disciplines and the protocols involved and share it with you and the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. So what I end with for TransData is geographic information services, our computerized data. We try to essentially geolocate all of our assets, so whether we know the mileage of our roadways, where we know our bridges are, our culverts, our signals, all of those things. And we actually have developed what we call a data portal. So again, that information is available to all of our stakeholders, primarily our local governments and our metropolitan planning organizations. And then one of the other things that many of you may have seen that we have is our project tracking tool, which really allows you to see the information for all of the projects that either have been constructed or currently are under construction. So a variety of different things that actually happen in TransData.
Senator Johnson.
This has been a curiosity of mine for a long time, only because I thought it was such a cool thing to do. Once upon a time when the state had vastly more money, ODOT used to fly and take a pictorial record of the coastline every 5 years. And I know that because I used to be the helicopter pilot that flew it. It is a fascinating record of what the coast looked like changing over time. I wasn't in the legislature then, but do you guys still do that? Because somewhere that record of Oregon's coast exists, and I think just for historical purposes, it would be an enormously valuable set of photographs.
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, yes, we do aerial photography, and we do it. We often share those resources and costs with a variety of different stakeholders. And yes, TransData has kept, I don't know how far it goes back, but they have kept all of those aerial photographies. And we actually, in some of our work, are able to show kind of that transition that happens over time.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
With as much emphasis as there is right now on coastal resilience and trying to iron plate the coast against the inevitable natural disasters or Cascadia subduction, I think having access to those photographs might be terribly informative for people that are studying resiliency and trying to do some of the preparation in advance of a catastrophic event.
Senator Johnson, complete agreement, and we actually share it with DOGAMI and all the natural resource agencies. So that information is available. And I don't know how far back OSU, there's actually a portal as well, and I think some of that information is on that portal as well. So
I'm glad to know it still exists. Thank you.
Yeah, no, and it does have some interesting information with it. So that gets us through TransData. The third section is active transportation. A little bit of a, I would say, a misnomer, because there's a lot more that happens in active transportation than perhaps the title implies. There's really kind of three groups that are associated with active transportation: our statewide programs, our program and funding, and our economic analysis unit. And this active transportation section came about during the last budget cycle, so 13-15. These folks were mostly located within the highway division, but again, we saw connections to the work that was happening in TDD, that the connection was a little bit stronger to locate them into TDD. One of the first ones is statewide programs. So we really recognize we have program administrators around our state bike and ped program, some of our federally mandated programs, such as what we now call transportation alternatives, scenic byways, congestion mitigation, air quality, known as CMAQ, and then our local government certification program. And they were all located within highway, but in different places. We saw the advantages of co-locating these to gain some efficiencies from our program administrative standpoint, but also one of the things that they do have in common is some of these are grant programs. Obviously, we're working with our local government, so we saw co-locating these folks in one place allowed for efficiencies for our partners at the state and local level as they had to work on projects, work on issues. So we are starting to see some of those efficiencies. It's just been a couple years that this has been underway.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
How elastic, Ms. Bohart, have you had to make the definition of the Highway Trust Fund to pay for some of these functions? I keep going back to a time when we used to pay for patrol out of the highway fund, and that was deemed not an adequate nexus. I'm trying to figure out how you've got people in the CMAQ program that are doing air quality that are being paid for by highway funds, because I presume that's how these people. No, they're not. Okay.
Those are federal funds.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, the Highway Trust Fund is not elastic. As a matter of fact, it's fairly rigid, and we adhere to it strictly. I think what you're seeing here is a lot of these programs that we migrated to the active transportation unit, they're federal dollars. And as a matter of fact, we were probably a year, maybe 2 years out in front of the federal government, because they actually migrated these standalone, what I termed orphan programs, doing good jobs by themselves, but they actually integrated the these types of programs into a major program known as transportation alternatives, or alternative transportation, I forget exactly the term here. So we were out in front and trying to find the synergy and the energies between these independent programs here. But mostly these are federal. No, we adhere very strictly to the disciplines of the Constitution.
Thank you for the correction.
Yeah.
So that's one of the groups within active transportation. The other is our economic analysis unit, and these are the folks that do the highway revenue forecast, cash flow forecast, the DMV transaction forecasting, so really trying to get a sense of what our funding looks like. They also provide really any of that support where we need to do any level of economic analysis, cost-benefit analysis for some projects. They also provided some of the economic analysis that were required when we applied for Tiger Grants, when those were available. So that's kind of the work of that unit. They also have the programmatic responsibility for the Immediate Opportunity Fund. The third group, and again kind of linked to the STIP that Director Garrett highlighted, is our programming and funding unit. And so these folks are really responsible for the development of the STIP. So this is where they really interact a lot with a number of our region staff. Each of our regions have what we call a STIP coordinator, and also each of the regions are really scoping the projects that get put into our STIP ultimately. But they're responsible for really working with federal highways, making sure that we meet all of those accounting responsibilities. They're the ones that actually make the obligation happens for each of the projects. They're the ones that actually make sure all of the counting happens with each of those projects, and that we're getting the reimbursements back from federal highways as we should for our various projects. So they're the ones that are really keeping tabs of all of that level of funding. So very different than I think you'll hear Mr. Psyche talk about his financial services folks. So that leaves one of the key sections, and that's to talk about transportation planning. Transportation planning occurs both here in headquarters as well as in the regions. And also within the planning section, we have what we call our planning analysis unit. The shorthand for that is the folks that are doing transportation modeling, and then our transportation growth management program. So first, talk a little bit about the planning work that goes on here in headquarters. And just to, again, a federal mandate as well as a state mandate for us to have a long-range transportation plan. So the Oregon Transportation Plan, which was adopted by the commission in 2006, while that's the umbrella document, we consider the Oregon Transportation Plan as really all of our modal plans and our topic plans. So I think Director Garrett talked about the recently adopted rail plan, the fact that we're underway with updating of our bicycle pedestrian plan. We have an existing highway plan, and back in 2011, we adopted the freight plan. So those are just some examples of sort of all the pieces of the puzzle that really incorporate the Oregon Transportation Plan. As I mentioned, we have a federal mandate to have that. Actually, our commission, is one of their roles and responsibilities is they have a long-range plan. And actually, the state planning goal requires that we have a state transportation system plan as well. So we make sure that these plans really accomplish a variety of different responsibilities. At the region level, we have planning at each of the regions. And what they're primarily doing is working with our local governments in the development of transportation system plans. These are transportation system plans that, as a state, we recognize that we need to work with the local governments to update them, typically because we see a project happening in that area and we want to make sure that we've addressed all of, excuse me, all the issues that we need to address, and we've been thinking about what are the right solutions relative to the needs there. The other part of the planning that happens at the region level is what we call facility planning. This is a specific geographic area. Many of you may have heard about interchange area management plans or corridor plans. And again, this is kind of a 20-year facility plan where we're looking at what are the problems and what are the needs that we have in that specific geographic area, and then what are the solutions to address those needs. And again, we're doing it in partnership with the local governments that are affected by that area. The other area that we have within planning, and I would also say that freight is part of that group as well, and I think many of you are aware of our freight staff. They staff the Connect Oregon program. They also are working with implementing the freight plan and also have the responsibility for staffing our Oregon Freight Advisory Committee, which was a legislatively approved committee. So we keep them fairly busy. The other group of planning that we have is the Transportation Growth Management Program, and this is a joint program between us and Department of Land Conservation. What this is a grant program, so it's locally driven, but it's looking at the transportation needs and then combining that with what specific local needs that may be. It is a highly sought after program. We just finished a pre-application process about a month ago, and really for the number of projects we can do, we usually get two to three times the request, the ability to provide the work that we can do. Kind of varies from year to year, but it certainly isn't is beyond what we're able to provide. Finally, the Transportation Planning Analysis Unit. So again, kind of that computerized mapping. So there are requirements both with federal highways, Federal Transit Authority, and actually EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, for us to have some modeling capabilities relative to our projects. We also provide support to our metropolitan planning organizations. And they also do other work. For instance, you've probably heard a couple presentations either from Travis Brower or perhaps Paul Mather around seismic resilience and around rough roads ahead. So what we did there was really used our integrated statewide model to understand what the consequences would be relative to the types of questions that were being asked. So for instance, in rough roads, it was what were the consequences if we're not able to maintain the system in its current state? What does that do from an economic competitive standpoint? So a variety of work happens within our planning analysis unit. And then finally, I would say, even within the planning, there's other work that happens that isn't necessarily managed by our planning staff. The highway cost allocation study, which is actually there's been some presentations on that today, as a matter of fact. That's actually funded here, though it is managed by DAS. We also do the flat fee study, which is something that's required for motor carrier, so we fund that for Greg Delpani. And then the disparity study, which is a requirement of federal highways and managed by civil rights, is also funded. So even though we may not do all of any of the planning work that really happens in the agency, some of those big planning efforts do get funded through this program. So that pretty much lays out organizationally and the type of work that happens within the transportation program development. So there's kind of, I would say, some themes to that, and the budget drivers, and that is we're really looking at how can we efficiently manage the transportation system. So certainly the work that we do in research, certainly the knowledge that we have around our assets really help us to improve the efficiency of the system. Certainly one of the themes here around economic balance. So recognizing our economic opportunities at the state level, integrating with the economic needs and desires of our local governments as well. Partnerships. So the partnerships that we have in this in the work that we do here is diverse. I think we touch just about everybody. So in research, we work with our universities. Our crash data we share with emergency management services, we share with police departments, certainly all the work that we do with local governments, the work that we do with our freight stakeholders, so some of the more recent work in active transportation, working with the Oregon Health Authority. So a lot of partnerships and a lot of stakeholders that are really involved in this discussion.
Excuse me, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to the active transportation and your interface with the health authority. Could you detail some of those connect points?
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, yes, and actually I think it's been about 4 years now that we actually have a memorandum of understanding that was signed by Director Garrett and the Director of Public Health, I believe, at the time.
Mr. Cohen.
Yeah, I think Dr. it was Mr. Cohen at the time. And it's really that the recognition about, and I wish one of our health people were here, but looking at active transportation and allowing that opportunity for walking, active transportation types of things really does provide some benefits to health. So we're seeing that talking about those in concert has become very important. There's also really interesting data that the Oregon Health Authority and others collect, CDC collects, that is very helpful for us in understanding what we need to be thinking about as we look at projects. So we work with them on data. We also work with them, our transportation modeling. They do modeling work to understand health impacts, so we're augmenting and they're augmenting their modeling work so that we can really look at that linkage between transportation and health.
A follow-up. One of the questions that I have is how proscriptive are some of the strictures that you have either in rule or in statute? And I think we're going to be losing some of our colleagues. This is an informational hearing, so please attend to your other meeting. And what I'm trying to get at is that you just did a recent project at the intersection of Cornelius Pass Road and Highway 30. And there is a crosswalk there with all the appurtenances due a crosswalk. Nobody crosses the street there. That is an intersection that's out a million miles from anywhere. I'm trying to figure out why the effort would be made to put the walk weight and all. Is that enforced by the feds? Is that something out of your shop? Why the extra expenditure on a crosswalk where there are no people?
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, I will have to get back to you to answer that question unless Dr. Carrick can.
Madam Chair, let me ask you. It was the result of a safety audit, not conducted out of Ms. Bohard's portfolio, but through the highway portfolio, the Region 1. So a lot of challenges had played themselves out on Cornelius Pass Road. So we sat down working with Multnomah County at the time and brought in folks from the outside to do a safety audit. And one of the issues that they identified is that intersection, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a dreadful intersection.
It is. And I won't question whether there are people walking there. You certainly know that area much better than I. But I will tell you it's the result of that audit that's saying this is an issue. We're gonna queue things up, make it a little bit safer. And this is one of the remedies, one of the operations additional fixes that we bring forth as we make that safety audit, those recommendations, and we make investments that try to address what has been identified as vulnerabilities or deficits.
And I understand that. I mean, arguably, that's a very dangerous intersection, yeah. And it has the requisite number of warrants to get safety improvements. I'm just trying to figure out where's that intersection of common sense and expenditure. Cornelius Pass is a disaster. I'd rather taken the walk and wait signs and invested them in guardrail farther up the hill. But it's more a rhetorical question than it is the specifics of that project.
Understood. Madam Chair, I would just submit that there was some indication that there was exposure.
Yeah. Okay, please continue.
Thank you. So really the last part is there's enabling legislation. So I think that you saw, hopefully through this presentation, that we have a number of mandates that really frames the work that we do, primarily at the federal level and some at the state level. So whether we're talking about the Oregon Transportation Plan or the various reporting requirements that we have at the federal level. There is a key performance measure associated with this limitation, and it's the travel delay. Unfortunately, this is a report. We get the information from the Texas Transportation Institute. They do this report every 2 years. They actually are changing their methodology, so when we normally would have had this report a little bit earlier this year, it is not yet available. So I don't have the information that really shows what's happening in 2013 and 2014. But I think it's fair to say that you all are aware travel delay is around the fact that you're spending more time on the roadway than the posted speed. Two key reasons for that, obviously one is capacity, but the other is incidences, whether it's weather, whether it's an accident. And I think you'll hear probably Mr. Mather in his presentation later on talk about some of the operational improvements and innovations that we're trying to do to get as efficient as we can with our existing system. And I know that many of you are aware of our trip planner and the work that we do there. So unfortunately, I can't say much about the key performance measure. So the significant program changes for 2013, the policy option package, is Connect 6. So depending on what happens with Connect Oregon 6, and I think we're all aware that it is packaged within the governor's budget. And then the only other really key significant change from the last budget cycle is the addition of the active transportation section. And finally, I would note that our budget is reduced from $224 million to $192 million. And this really reflects kind of the completion of Connect Oregon projects. So it's really the completion of projects, so phasing out of those funds. So with that.
Ms. Bohard, for the benefit of our new members, if it's not up on OLIS and I just don't recall, would you send out the list of Connect projects just so that folks can see the breadth of projects and the fact that, as you reported in your presentation, most of those are done or significantly underway or in design. And they've moved rather quickly from Connect 1 through Connect 5 with lots of ribbon cuttings and frankly, lots of jobs created.
Correct. I'd be glad to provide that.
And I guess just on the record, as we're kind of winding down the committee, I would like to acknowledge the role that your staff played in shepherding through the last Connect. That was not without some controversy along the way, and I think that they were really extraordinarily competent administrators of the process, including two final selections. So you had final selection and then final selection. But Chris Cummings, I think, particularly needs to be called out for the very professional and competent management of that selection process.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. I appreciate that. And yes, we're very fortunate to have him on her staff.
Stole him from aviation, by the way. But
I wasn't going to say that.
Trust me, I remember. Okay, colleagues, any questions from Ms. Bohard? Mr. Garrett, any concluding remarks?
I think
See, with a good gavel, yeah. You got done 10 minutes early. As long as I didn't have it, that's...
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate that. Appreciate your compliment to Mr. Cummings. I too would be remiss if I didn't think that man is a consummate professional, and he navigated some very choppy waters over the last several months here. So I appreciate you acknowledging that, as well as all the professionals within the discipline. Madam Chair, this actually concludes. It's my understanding, and Julie can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but we now clear the phase one conversation. Monday, we turn our attention to public testimony, and then we move to portfolios that haven't had the privilege of coming before the committee, our highway portfolio and our central service portfolio. That will move to that second phase, or that I think the April 13, 14, 15 timeframe. So with that, we appreciate the opportunity. We're a phone call away should any questions come up.
Thank you very much. Ms. Nabirka, any concluding remarks from you?
No, thank you, Senator Johnson. Mr. Garrett has made them for me.
Okay. And Ms. Brickman, are we going to hear from you today in any aspect, or we're just finishing the agency's presentation and nothing from the chief financial officer?
Nothing.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to give you an opportunity to... All right, colleagues, anything for the good of the order? There is nothing. We will be meeting at our accustomed time on Monday, back in our accustomed place. And with that, I will declare us adjourned. Thank you. Thank you. And with that, I will declare us adjourned.